I'm your host, Manon Sabir, the Grapevine, and we're about to pick some grapes. And thank you again to Maybe Shannon and the Ray Nitty. Yes, we got Zach on the ones and twos and threes and fours. I think he's ready to take a break, man. Straight up. So we all gonna take a break. And before we take this break, I'd like to thank y'all for tuning in to 101.7 The Truth, because we are happy that you are here. We are happy that you're listening. And we love the fact that you are in Milwaukee and tuned in. Milwaukee, it's almost the fourth. The grill's out. Somebody's cousin already started the playlist argument, talking about, man, I'm going to play T-Pain. Or whatever. Whatever they playing. They playing Bow by Ray Nitty. And somewhere else, some auntie is already guarding a potato salad, talking about don't put no raisins in it. She guarding it like it's Fort Knox. But before we get to the fireworks, let's get to the fire. About 174 years ago, just about a man named Frederick Douglass stood up. Yep, he stood up in front of a crowd on this exact holiday, and he asked them straight up. He was like, what is the 4th of July to a slave? He ain't sugarcoat it. He ain't call it a sham. He said the fireworks, the flags, and the parade, none of it was for him. None of it was for his people. I'm going to read a little bit what Frederick Douglass said. He said, who could address this audience without quelling a sensation, has stronger nerves than I have. I do not remember ever to have appeared as a speaker before any assembly more shrinkingly, nor with greater distrust of my ability than I do this day. A feeling has crept over me, quite unfavorable to the exercise of my limited powers of speech. The task before me is one which requires much previous thought and study for its proper performance. I know that apologies of this sort are generally considered flat and unmeaning. I trust, however, that mine will not be considered. Should I seem at ease, my appearance would much misrepresent me. The little experience I have in addressing public meetings in country schoolhouses avails me nothing on the present occasion. I'm going to read one more thing. The papers and placards say that I'm to deliver a 4th July oration. This was the beginning of Frederick Douglass's speech to a group of folks that invited him out to talk about. They thought that he was going to talk about the 4th of July and how happy we were to be on the 4th of July. And he said the quite opposite. He said, what was it? What was the 4th of July to a slave? In 1776, we were still slaves. And so now we're here, 2026, and we got the cookout. We got fireworks. We got the flag flying on our porches. So the question today isn't do we celebrate, right? Because we celebrate as people, we celebrate everything. We celebrate everything. We celebrate everything that's in our blood. It's straight up in our blood. The question is, what are we really celebrating? And who earned the right to ask that question out loud? So today, between 1 and 4, we're going to do both. We're going to laugh. We're going to, you know, eat good in spirit. I'm not eating on the air with y'all. I might have a little bit of chocolate or something, but I'm not going to eat that much. Even if you can't smell it through the radio, we're going to argue about cookout songs, like it's a title fight. And we're going to get real about what freedom looks like when it's still catching up to some of us. So this is fireworks and freedom papers. And Milwaukee, we need you to pull up. So pull up from the YouTube channel. Hit us up on YouTube live. Hit us up in the chat. We want to hear. We're going to hear from you. This is Thursday. This is Thirsty Thursday. This is our last day of the week, basically, for a lot of us. Or you could text me at 833-212-1017. You can pick some grapes. Or you can give us a call, and we're going to find out what's on your mind. I want to know. Like, you can tell me whatever. Straight up. It doesn't matter. So, 1852. It's 1852. It's you in Rochester, New York. Shout out to Rochester. Y'all got a great, dope underground hip-hop scene. Fantastic underground hip-hop scene. So, if you know about hip-hop, go ahead and check out Rochester, New York. Frederick Douglass gets invited to speak at a 4th of July event. And instead of giving them that flag-waving speech they expected, he flips it on them. He flips it so cold. So he basically says, and I'm going to paraphrase. I'll probably read a little bit just to give you a little context. And not read it, and I'm not going to read it all, but I want to give y'all a little context. He said the celebration itself, and what he's trying to do in this, if you ever read the speech, what he's trying to do, he's trying to reveal the gaps between America's promise, like the promise of independence, and America's practice. And there's a difference between the promise and the practice. You can promise something, but until you put it into action, then that becomes a whole nother thing. So if you promise one thing and then you don't put it into practice, then you just, it's falling on dead ears. It's falling on, it's dead weight. So him looking at the people that were listening, he flipped the whole party. So that's the, and more than any day of the year, he had to make the switch. And that's the celebration itself, to someone still in chains. You know, like even 20 years, 30 years prior, he was trying to free himself. 20 years prior, he was trying to free himself from the modern, that at that time, the modern whips and chains of a slave master. Straight up, he was trying to get himself free. So for him to have that opportunity, and for him not to speak on the ideal of independence and its promise and the actual practice of independence, it would behoove him not to do it. So at that time, he's just proclaiming that the Independence Day, the 4th of July, was a party that they were having around him, but he wasn't invited to. Like, it's happening in your own front yard. And imagine this. Like, it's a party, people kicking it. They got barbecues, you know, all this other stuff, and it ain't going down for you. In certain areas, they use this celebration to go and lynch black people. This was a part of the celebration. They was going picnic. That's what it was. So check this out. I'm gonna read just the last part of his speech, because I want people to really get this context. He said, what did he say? He said, the far off and almost fabulous Pacific rose in grandeur at our feet. The celestial empire, the mystery of ages, is being solved. The flat of the Almighty, let there be light, has not yet spent its force. No abuse, no outrage, whether in taste, sport, or avarice, can now hide itself from the all-pervading light. The iron shoe and crippled foot of China must be seen in contrast with nature Africa must rise and put her yet unwoven garment and put on her yet unwoven garment. This is literally what this man said. In 1852, he's telling a room full of people that don't look like him at all that Africa must rise and put on her yet unwoven garment. Ethiopia shall stretch out her hand unto God in the fervent aspirations of William Lloyd Garrison, I say, and let every heart join in saying. So he's telling people to, to repeat after him. But listen, he's telling people that things are going to flip. He's saying Africa must rise and put on her yet unwoven garment. He said, Godspeed, the year of Jubilee, the wide world over, when from their galling chain set free, the oppressed shall vilely bend the knee and wear the yoke of tyranny like brutes no more. That's from William Lloyd Garrison. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but you get my drift. You get my drift. Now, this speech is almost dang near 200 years old, and yet, y'all tell me if I'm wrong, but when you scroll past all these fireworks, these pictures, you roll past the fireworks, it's, you know, you got the fireworks pictures and you on your phone, you looking at all the fireworks. Does any part of this still feel like the gap that he was talking about? Or has the gap closed enough that it doesn't sting the same? So it's not a rhetorical question, Milwaukee. I'm just like, the phone lines is open. I want to hear it. Is it still the same or is it different? Do we just close the gap? The phone lines open, 833-212-1017, and you can hit us up on YouTube chat on the Truth Radio 101.7. We'll be back in two. Welcome back. I'm your host, Manon Sabir. Yes. And this is the Grapevine. We're going to pick some more grapes. Straight up, we're going to pick some more grapes because I'm excited because we fighting the power. We fighting the power before the 4th of July. We fighting the power. Those lyrics were from Public Enemy, Fight the Power. He said, 1989. I mean, you know, they ain't 89, but it's all the same, right? Another summer. Sound of the funky drum. Music hitting your heart because I know you got soul, brothers and sisters. Listen if you're missing. Y'all swinging while I'm singing. Giving what you're getting, knowing what I know while the black band's sweating and the rhythm rhyme rolling. Got to give us what we want. Got to give us what we need. Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. And it's real. Like, we're not gonna sugarcoat it. We can't sugarcoat it, y'all. Straight up, they were right. Swinging while I'm singing. So this is he's saying to everybody, like, he's saying to everybody that this song is my connection to you, and it's also your theme song. It's your theme song. So we're going to switch gears for a minute. We're going to switch gears, but we're going to stay on topic, stay on theme, and stay with me. Because yesterday I was invited to watch the Team USA. Congratulations to Team USA soccer team. Straight up, y'all did your thing. If y'all listening, thank you so much. I really appreciate y'all. We appreciate y'all for doing your thing, fighting for the country. And I noticed it was, you know, the team got a little dark. Got a lot more froze on the squad. So this week we sitting here asking, and I started asking myself who America really claims. Team USA is at the World Cup, and the reason why they're still alive in this tournament, you know, in the World Cup, is because of a kid named Malik. His name is Malik. A kid named Malik Tillman buried what they call a free kick. So if you're not used to soccer, he buried a free kick, and he had blood coming through his sock. He didn't even care. Kicked that ball, man. He kicked that ball, and it went. It was like 3 inches above one player, and the ball just dropped past the goalie and in. And the team was down. You know, in soccer, you play 11 on 11. The goalie is part of the squad. So they had 10. It was the Team USA had 10 people, 10 players on the team, because one player named Follerin, he was another black player who was playing cold. He got kicked off. He got what they call a red card. So he had to, they penalized the team, and then he had to leave the field. So he, you know, went to the showers. They had 10 men. They down a body. Everybody in the stadium literally counting USA out, because they like, all right, 10 men, you know, they got 20 minutes left. These dudes are about to, these kids were like, especially the black kids, a lot of them, it's like 60% black on this squad. So they probably look at each other like, man, nah, not today. Not today. So this isn't just sports. I'm not necessarily talking about sports. And I'm not, this is not just a highlight, but this is a metaphor, you know, it's a metaphor walking around in cleats, walking around in some soccer cleats. And there's the thing that gets me, this ain't new. Black kids have been grinding on soccer fields in this country for decades, including yours truly. Getting told to go play basketball, that's y'all sport. Getting looked at sideways when they showed up to travel teams, because with soccer, you travel just as much as you do AAU basketball and or more. Not only do you play at younger ages internationally, but you play with people that aren't even from your genre, your culture, you know, your race, nothing. You play with people who are completely different from you, right? So it overseas, you know, is worse. You get chants, slurs thrown at you, bananas thrown on the field. It's a whole ugly history of what it costs black players just to be allowed to play at the highest of all high levels. And remember, soccer is a very international sport. One of the best sports you can lean into for, you know, for investment or to just play as a kid and to be able to travel the world. This is one of the best sports you can do. And we don't talk about that enough. We don't talk about how you can play at the highest level, how these black players are allowed to play at the highest level. Because the highlight reel only shows the goal, not the years. Nobody's believing in you before the goal. So here's my question for the highlight. I want you to sit this on your mind. I want you to really sit this on your mind. America loves us loud, out loud, when we're winning something for them. Scoring the goal, getting the win, waving the flag in the post-game interview. You draped in it, you know, yeah, America, everybody cheering. But does that love hold up over the other 364 days of the year when there's no scoreboard, there's no trophy, There's no trophy on the line. It's just us walking through the world as who we are with nothing to win for anybody. Yes, like when, you know, the black folks came home from Nam. They came home from the war, and they were sitting back like, yeah, you know, I'm back home. They came back, and it's like how they showed depicted in Dead Presidents, and how Lorenz Tate came home, whatever his name is in the movie, came home, and he, you know, had his thing, and, you know, he's proud to be home, and his mom was trying to ask some questions, and you could see on his face, all he wanted to do was be celebrated just a little bit, but she trying to ask him what was going on. His dad was like, calm down, lady. Like, this guy got out of 5 years of the service. Calm down. So when it's just us walking through the world, nothing to win for anybody. I already got my answer. When there's no scoreboard, I'm going to ask this question again. When there's no scoreboard, no question, no trophy on the line, does that same love hold up over the last 364 days? When it's just us walking through the world, who we are, nothing to win for nobody. I got my answer, but I want to hear yours. The phone lines is open. The phone lines is open. The phone lines open. The YouTube chat is open. Go to the YouTube chat. You could text me 833-212-10117 if you're still at work and you ain't celebrating your 4th of July or the 4th of July. It can be everybody's. My granddad, I'm pretty sure he's ready to celebrate too. He served two wars. He did two. Straight up. He did the Korean War and he did the Vietnam War. 90-something years old. And he knows what this is about. He only celebrates it because he likes to have the day off. He would likes to see when they're off of work. But he knows the history. He's also a historian. But the phone line's open. And just don't tell me you like the goal. Tell me what it made you feel. Because I guarantee it was a nice shot. It was a cold shot. But when you look at it, when you really, really look at all of this, we had people. I remember going to a soccer game, and a friend of mine, Jamal was playing. He was playing. He's a big old, you know, big old guy. He's 6'2", 6'3". He's running up and down the field. He's about 200 pounds, and he's fast. And he's doing this thing, and he does a sliding tackle on somebody. It was legal. Sliding tackle, gets the ball. Kid falls down. He flops. The kid's dad then says, calls us the N-word, then calls us monkeys. Now, we a team full of kids whose parents just came out of the, like, civil rights. What do you think we did? It's probably minute, you know, I don't know. We probably in 30 minutes of the game. It's an hour-long game. Man, this guy said that, and Jamal turned around, 6'3", 200 pounds, and he looked at the dude. He was like, what you say? I'm going to tell you the rest of the story in 2 minutes. Man, hey, somebody texted me the other day about these beats. And they were like, these are fire. Zach, hey, look, literally he hit me twice. The dude was like, man, these are some fire beats. And then he hit me again, was like, yeah, these are some very, very fire beats. So I really appreciate it, man. I really do. Cold producer. What the business is, looking to discover and support local businesses in our community, then make sure you tune in every Friday at 8 a.m. to Truth in the Morning with Homer Blow and Bailey Coleman for What the Business Is, powered by We Energies. Each week, we'll hear from local business owners as they share what their business is, they're located, where they're located, and one valuable lesson they've learned along the way. We Energies is proud to help power local businesses and the communities they serve. Don't miss What the Business Is every Friday at 8 a.m. only on Truth in the Morning with Homer Blow and Bailey Coleman, powered by We Energies, delivering the energy that powers local business. And now we're back. Welcome back to the Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabirian. Guess what we're talking about? We are talking about the 4th of July. My boy Looney always, he probably would say the 4th of July. You lying? So, yes, 4th of July. We talking about Frederick Douglass. I read some lyrics. I read some lyrics from his speech, his 4th of July speech, and y'all gotta read it, man. Y'all have to read it. Those words from that speech are relevant to today. Still relevant. Because if you look at how relevant those words are, you'll learn a lot about who you are right now. You will definitely learn about what's going on with you, not just the system. So then we started talking about the Team USA and the story and how the story of having black players on a squad on a supposed to be a predominantly white squad. Ultimately, it was for a while. Now it's full of black players. And I was thinking, before I even get back to my story, is that y'all, I want y'all to feel this. Soccer was not invented by Europeans. It wasn't. Soccer was, from what I know, invented by natives. So for it to be a backdrop of racial superiority for so long is an atrocity in itself. But there is a boatload of racism in a sport that doesn't even belong to the people who hold power in this sport. They kept so many people out of its graces. You have people who broke into it, like Jimmy Banks, a local from Milwaukee who got international attention for being one of the best soccer players almost in the world. Fast, strong, athletic, all that. But he was able to make it happen. And he has, you know, children, and you know, it's that's what it is. So now this team, I'm gonna give you the backdrop for this team before I go back into the story. The backdrop of this squad is amazing. They got, you know, they got 60% black players on the squad. And they're, you know, fabulous individuals. They're probably some very athletic kids who didn't just play soccer. They probably grew up playing all the other sports, but soccer happened to stand out for them. They were, some of them come from different backgrounds. You know, probably had a dad who ran track for Ivy League school, at Ivy League school, PWI. You know, and he probably got a, you know, cold, you know, high level degree. And then you probably had a dad who gave his genes to his son, who was, you know, had a past. He had a past. He didn't run track. He just hopped fences. Now you got a son who's playing on the highest level. And people want to tap into that. But it's not just Team USA that's tapped into it's not just Team USA that tapped into how important black players now are in the sport of soccer. It's people all over the world. If you look at the majority of the top European players, the top players that are in Europe playing in all those leagues, and also some of those players that are playing in the World Cup today. I'm going to take an example of not a far cry, France. France's squad is full of African players that speak French, that happen to have a nationality in France. Mbappe and whoever, Bale or whatever it's got, these guys' names are. Like, these guys are some of the best in the world, and they're playing for a European country. Very, very interesting. So you can't deny I'm not even going to say the superiority, but you can't deny the fact that you have to tap in to the people you kept out. Straight up. It's almost inevitable. It took for Team USA, it took a coach from, I think he's Uruguayan or Paraguay, wherever he's from, to play with these black players from America and recognize that they are some of the highest level athletes that you could get from out of America, and teach them brand new skills and allow them to play at the highest level. It just happens. And it's no shade against any other, any other person, any other race of individual. No. It's just what it is. This is just what it is. The genetic code of African born and also genealogically African American and European Africans is undeniable. You got people who are playing in favelas and ghettos, and they playing with rocks, like literal rocks and socks. And then they coming out and they're like, you allow me to play soccer? And I had to fight for my life? No, I'm going to play. Yeah, and I ain't letting it go. Sign that contract, $100 million. Like, that's what some of these guys are getting paid in soccer. They're getting paid way more. That's why you got basketball players that are investing in these even B, C league soccer teams. Yo, these players are getting paid straight up. So back to my story. When I was playing soccer, and I'm gonna update everybody. When I was playing soccer, I had a guy named Jamal on my squad, 6'3", 6'2", whatever, 200 pounds, fast, able to play soccer. He played. He was good. And, man, he did a sliding tackle on somebody. The kid happened to be white. He was a little smaller, but he was my height. So I'm 5'7", 5'8". And the kid did a little flop, and his dad, who was, I think even his dad sounded like he was from Australia or something like that. But it didn't matter. You know, a word is a word. He called us the N-word, and he said monkeys. And Jamal looked up. He looked like the Incredible Hulk. He was like, what did you say? And, man, you should have saw the entire crowd. Our crowd, it was probably us, our coach, and our van that was black. That was it. And then the rest of the crowd was white. And so we were way out, like middle of, like, we probably an hour away from Milwaukee. And this dude said this, and We 30 minutes into the game. Jamal took one step, and we had this guy, we called him 65, Jason. Shout out to Jason. Runs out the goalie box. He's playing goalie. He runs out the goalie box, grabs Jamal. Jamal shakes him. And Jason, about 140, soaking wet at the time. Boop. And they're like holding Jamal back. But other people start going after this dude. The parent. The parent jumps in his Porsche and peels out and leaves his son. He peels out and leaves his son on the field. Man. And when I say it, we had it out for that kid, it was a wrap. It was a wrap for him. We did not. His son was being aimed at the entire time. So these are some of the things that this is just a microcosm of what black players in soccer had to deal with. This is just a small smidget of what players had to deal with, soccer players. So if I'm gonna go to the chat line after our break. But I guarantee you that if you look at this sport and you look at the World Cup, go look and see how many African-born and or African players are playing on squads that are Euro-friendly. Hey, we're going to be back in two because we're going to continue on. But if you ain't from where I'm from, like some dog, don't come on, you getting dirty. Yeah, we cheating, dog, that's automatic. We greedy, plus we trying to feed the needy dog with all the cash. From the rich and give to the poor, we sell a few. Don't let us find a big dog, we turn him into spigot. Yeah, shout out to Cuckoo Cow. Minimize, man. Straight up. I hope this song is part of the theme of the cookout. Straight up. I hope y'all are gonna, if you gonna get together, my daddy always said, if you gonna do it all the way. Shout out to Muhammad Sabir. If you gonna do it all the way. Just go all the way in. Because, you know, if you gonna go extreme, just go all the way in on the extreme. That's probably why people like this extremist that's in this office. They like, all right, man, somebody's not going to toe the line on extremism. He's going to make $2 billion last year, 2025. $2 billion? 2.2. He made $1.8 million on some watches or something of that sort and some books. Man, let me make that. But welcome back. I'm your host, Manon Sabir. You're on 101.7 The Truth, and this is The Grapevine. We are picking some grapes, and we're talking about the 4th of July. The 4th of July. Yes, we're talking about it. We're in it. This thing is real. We talked about, I was talking about Frederick Douglass and how he had a speech that he was supposed to give on the 4th of July. And he didn't cut any corners. He didn't cut any corners. He told them straight up Like he said to these folks, the iron shoe and crippled foot of China must be seen in contrast with nature. But this is really what he said was, this is, and he put this on a room full of folks that didn't even look like him. He said, Africa must rise and put on her yet unwoven garment. Y'all remember that? Because what he's saying is the origin of mankind is in Africa. And he's telling these people who are possible descendants, maybe a generation away from slave owners and or people who come from different parts of the world. He's telling them, and citizens of the United States, he's telling them that your nation is not as superior as the continent that I come from. And he's telling them to relay this message to the people that they think that they're going to free. And he says, Africa must rise and put on her yet unwoven garment. Ethiopia shall stretch out her hand unto God. Ethiopia, he's saying, is Abyssinia. Abyssinia houses a very large nation of individuals that are from, that are closely related to Jesus the Christ. Yes. And he's, man, lit bars, bars. So I'm glad y'all back. I'm glad I'm dropping these bars on you. And here's my take. Y'all could come for me in the chat if you want to, but I think the cookout is the answer to Douglas's question and his statements. Not instead of the hard conversation alongside it, walking hand in hand with it. Because think about it. A people that were never supposed to survive, they were never supposed to build wealth, we were never supposed to have joy on purpose, never, turned an entire summer holiday into a full-on cultural institution. It's in our system. It's in our blood. The food, the music, the family reunion energy, the cousins you only see like maybe twice a year. You know, the FaceTiming, all of that. Like your uncle that show up like it's his own place. Like the uncle to show up on the back in the back of the. You know, he show up and he come through the back door. The uncle that shows up and he's like, man, what's up, y'all? That's us saying you tried to break us and we still found a way to have a good time on the exact day you claim was about freedom. That's defiant. And that's dope. That's resistance with the paper plate in your hand and the red cup that probably definitely ain't got water in it. Or sometimes. Right. Never mind. But I want to go a layer deeper because I think it's more than just like defiance. I think it's preservation. Every recipe, and just look at it. Every recipe passed down without a written measurement, like it's to taste. You see your grandmother and she, you know, take some flour and she put a little on there. I don't even know what that's called. Like, this little pinch. That's a pinch. Yep. So every recipe that ain't got no real measurement, grandma, is it done? You'll know when it's done. You will know when it's done. Get out my kitchen. Every playlist that somehow got, that gets everybody on the dance floor, like every playlist, they probably got some people probably got the same playlist for years. That's culture. It's our culture surviving on purpose. It's actually thriving because we have to take something and make that something out of nothing. This really isn't our holiday, and we made it ours. So that's us saving and saying our joy doesn't need permission. And it definitely doesn't need an invitation from somebody who's checking for us the other 364 days. Now, don't get it twisted. Don't please get it twisted. Resistance doesn't mean somebody didn't bring store-bought potato salad to the cookout and try to play it off like it's homemade because they probably put like a little bit of mayonnaise in there and then, you know, using a lot of choo-choos. That's treason. That's like, you need to leave. That potato salad is not getting eaten. If you got homemade potato salad, that's the potato salad that's getting eaten with a side of like Doritos. So that's a whole different conversation for a whole different show. And honestly, might need his own 3 hours for that one person who's bringing potato salad from Pick and Save. But for real, I want callers on this, though. Is the cookout just a party to you, or does it mean something bigger? Like, when I go down south to, you know, hang out with some of my folks down south, I know that when they doing their cookouts, like, it ain't just a party, man. It's like a time to resist. Like, there's a book called, and don't get me wrong, there's a book called Rest is Revolution or something like that. That's a part of the resting from the stress and the system that had, one, enslaved us, two, is keeping us on the hamster wheel. This is our part of our resistance. This is part of our resistance. And there's so many documentaries about food as an act of defiance in Black culture. The sweet potato pie, like, all of that has an act of defiance embedded in its recipes that your grandmother ain't passed down because she did everything by hand. So you could tell me about a family member who makes it what it is. Tell me about the tradition that nobody's allowed to mess with. I want people to call in 833-212-1017. Call in. Let me know. Let me hear. The phone lines are open. Don't be shy. Don't be shy at all. Somebody put somebody's name on blast for that potato salad situation. Put somebody's name on blast for making some whack fried chicken. Put, like, if they bring bait, somebody, you know, the problem is somebody bringing baked chicken to the cookout. Don't bring baked chicken to the cookout. Barbecue that joint. Barbecue it. And I'm the health guy. I like, but you know, today this is about resistance. This is about resistance. We're gonna take a break, take a little longer break. When we come back, we're gonna talk about a little bit of that resistance when we get back in two.